Hey, folks. So we recorded a whole other episode all about modern movie monsters. And unfortunately, the audio on that one was unsalvageable. And so we've recorded a brand new conversation. That's what you're hearing now.
Well, it's not what you're hearing right now.
No, right now is you're hearing me tell you what happened.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't get...
Spoiler alert. Jeez.
This is why you didn't get Monsters Part 2 directly after Monsters 1. So anyway, here's a brand new recording. We, you know, talked about cool stuff, and listen up, buddy, or else.
Drew, we should talk about monsters. I'm dead.
I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Hourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time.
Hey, John. So we had a great conversation. If you agree with everything I say, just don't say anything right now.
Yeah. What do I do with this thing?
Modern.
Hello.
Modern.
Modern.
In quotes, I think. Modern, yeah, movie monsters. Do we define... Modern. Can we define, because, you know, we talked about classic movie monsters.
Right.
And, you know, truth be told, we came to that title after the fact, right?
Yeah, we were just going to talk about monsters
in general. Period. We had a big old long conversation. We're like, this is a two-part.
Dragged. You were just like,
well, I like monsters a lot. I want to be a monster.
I'm a little upset you cut all that out. But we talked, and it turned out we talked in chronological order, kind of, from Universal Monsters.
Yeah, we sort of traced the history of monsters.
Yeah.
Starting with the history of movie monsters, I guess we should specify.
Yeah, we kind of stuck with movie monsters.
Yeah. Talked a little bit about the mythological origins of said movie
monsters.
Yeah.
But, you know, the, like, Godzilla, he's from the 50s, isn't he?
Yes.
Maybe.
That's sort of a good starting point. Like,
yeah.
Kind of
the bridge. Pre-50s, I think he's,
and the Godzilla. Godzilla is the bridge.
He is kind of a bridge between what were the classic movie monsters and what became modern movie monsters, right?
Arguably, yeah.
In a way, we're gonna put that forward.
Well, you could say that
it's a theory.
The classic movie monster era sort of ended with World War II.
Yeah,
and you could argue that Godzilla is an outgrowth.
Because then we had some real monsters, of World War folks. II. Oh. Real monsters.
Oh, it just got dark, man.
Let's get this serious.
It just got so dark.
Can we get really serious for a second? There's some real monsters out there. Now, I think society woke up.
Yeah, yeah. They're like, this hokey putting fur on your face is not going to cut it anymore.
We don't
taping
need...
Taping vampire fangs to Bela Lugosi's mouth just doesn't scare me. I've seen...
Yeah.
I've seen...
I saw death.
I've been to the promised land, man. I came back with
something. It's hard to talk about.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about.
Yeah. Well, we weren't there. We don't know.
I mean, for them, it would be hard to talk
about. Oh, yeah. No, that's very true.
So what came out of that, and especially for, I think, the Japanese, because they had as a culture and as a country, had a very... real experience.
A visceral
experience. Visceral with the atomic bomb. The atom bomb.
They got about as close to the atom bomb as you can get, really.
And that has since had a huge influence on the stuff that they put out, the art
and
the entertainment that they put out. And one of the first examples of that is Godzilla.
It is. It's kind of like you could say that's sort of their and I hate to put this in sort of endocentric terms, but it's I think very much in the way that 9/11 has shaped everything that happened in America post 9/11, everything has been influenced heavily by it. Same thing happened with Godzilla. It's like the art with Japan and
Godzilla. When Godzilla attacked Japan, they wouldn't stop making movies about it. We get it.
Suddenly people had to take their scales off when they got on airplanes.
Jeez.
But so the bomb drops on Japan in 1945, and curiously, not too long after that, suddenly there is this huge wave of movies coming out of Japan all about the effects of nuclear explosions in Japan.
And not just Japan.
Or around Japan.
But Japan was, I mean, movies at that time all over started taking that turn, that science fiction sort of science perverting nature kind of turn, right?
Well, then there were two sides to it, and that was sort of the distinction. Like the Japanese, it was very much like this is an inevitability. Yeah. This is what's going to happen to us because somebody has dropped a bomb,
right?
And this is what we're going to have to deal with.
Right.
Whereas, like in the United States, and I guess like England too, there were a few like British sci-fi movies coming out of that same era. But like the United States was sort of like it was the threat of what could happen if, you know, for example, my pet spider was to get bombed.
I think there's also, it seemed that in Western culture, a lot of times the monsters were created by man, purposefully in a way, you know, like they were tampering with certain things and there was a result. Whereas, with Japan, it was done to them.
Yeah.
Right. They had this all these atomic mutations happen as a result of what
they
someone
were
else did. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. 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 Which makes sense, I guess.
And then they're those monsters then they're then the victims of those monsters as well. They're sort of at the whim of these giant monsters like Godzilla. Mm. And there were good monsters sort of and there were bad monsters, right? Gamera, the turtle monster, he was like a flying spinning turtle. He's kind of a good
guy.
From
space, wasn't he?
Was he?
Wasn't he from outer space?
I don't know.
He was from outer space. Well, he went into space.
He could go anywhere.
Yeah, he was Gamera.
But they'd call on him. They'd be like, can you come help? That's right, he is very neat.
Yeah.
Wouldn't they summon him for?
But not initially, though. He started out bad, I think.
Oh.
And then he turned good.
Hmm.
But I don't know the circumstances of like what turned him good. Like, did he just run out of bad things to do? Did he or did he get bored? You know?
Well, I think what happened is they a badder monster showed up.
Okay.
And got on Gamera's turf, and Gamera's like, uh-uh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The enemy of my enemy is my enemy.
War friend.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Wait, the enemy.
Well, his enemy would have been Japan, but then there was another enemy that was Japan's enemy.
So then Japan
and
becomes
he's like,
his friend.
Wait a minute.
Right?
Can you pick your friends, Gamera? I don't know.
Well, he did.
He did.
Gamera, Rodan.
Rodan.
Gojira.
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 That's Godzilla.
King Ghidra.
Yep.
He was the three-headed one.
Mecha Godzilla.
Oh, Mecha Godzilla is badass.
A robot.
Yeah.
He's a robot.
He's a robot.
Robots.
Son of Godzilla?
Godzuki?
Is that what his name was?
Well, there's a little Godzilla guy.
I just remember there being like a son of Godzilla or Godzilla's
I think that's
son.
Godzuki.
Okay. Sure.
It's
Mothra? Kind of like the Robin to Godzilla's Kermit.
I thought Batman and Robin.
Oh no,
not Kermit and Robin.
Like Kermit the Frog and Robin,
his
little nephew.
Yep, that makes more
Thanks,
sense.
Thanks, Uncle Kermit.
That's good.
Let's go see this Godzilla. Oh, that's terrible, Kermit. Man,
let's go find Godzilla.
Hello, Gil. Let's watch
hello,
Godzilla.
Gil. Oh, hello, Bill. I'm Phil. Sorry.
Mothra is
giant
pretty badass. Yeah,
what's the guy with the is that Rodan who has the pointy beak,
the sort of Yeah, that, like the blade head. That's Rodan. The knife guy?
Oh, yeah, the knife guy. Who's that?
Oh, man.
Why don't you know? You're like the guy who knows.
You are the ghost who walks. The guy who knows. I don't know what his name was. I think it was... No, Sauron. Wasn't it Sauron?
It's from Lord of the Rings.
No, there was a monster named Sauron, I think. And it was
Lord
the
of the
guy.
Rings. Yeah, he was a monster.
Right, Christopher Lee. He put on a big
no,
shark
that's
head
Saruman. And...
Oh, all right.
Get it right.
He was something like that. The shark-headed knife guy.
They were sort of the... They were like monstrous monsters. You know, like they were full-blown... when I think of monsters, you know, obviously there's stuff like Dracula, werewolves and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're sort of human in a way at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
Either they...
Yeah, they're formerly... basically like a man shape.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And this was like the beginning of these crazy, could never be mistaken for a human being monsters.
It was, sort of a melding of like fantasy and animal, you know, like you have Mothra, okay?
Yeah.
And then these like gigantic proportions. So not only is he like this weird twisted moth variant, but he's a zillion feet tall.
He's huge.
Yeah. He's literally gigantic. The size. He could eat the earth. Yeah, I don't know.
He did eat the earth.
He building at a time.
He never ate it.
He didn't eat anything really.
You would need a giant sweater.
No, they never ate anything. They never like that's like sort of like your initial fear of like an animal is that it's gonna bite you or
they didn't eat
but they never
they just destroyed
they
things.
Just breathed fire on things.
What they should have done with Mothra is built an enormous closet with giant sweaters in it. He would have gone
just
in
one
there.
Giant.
And,
yeah.
He would have eaten that sweater.
We must stretch this sweater across the Atlantic Ocean. We've got him. We've got him.
One guy celebrating. He's got his trumpet.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Or just, you know, lit the moon on fire and had him just fly up there. Yeah, it distracted him.
Why not the sun? It's made of fire.
Yeah, he never paid any attention to the sun.
He was, I guess that's part of his mutation.
Oh, yeah.
He no longer had a desire for light. I mean, that's unfortunate because he would have gone straight for the sun.
The Earth's porch is screwed. Yeah. We're never going to get in the back door. That damn moth is going to be blocking the way.
It's like your spider.
Yeah, yeah.
From the mist.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
We should talk about those
monsters. We should talk
monsters.
About those guys. Oh, man.
The mist, the recent, the fairly Stephen recent King Stephen adaptation. King adaptation.
Yeah. Somewhat notorious. Like, I feel like the two of us are probably the only people who would deem it worth talking about that movie because it seems like nobody liked that movie.
Nobody liked it. Nobody. I thought it was exceptional.
But I do, too. I think it's
probably... You know what? I know some people who like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're good people.
Good. Yeah. We should get a society together.
That had weird...
Oh, wait. That's Tig.
That had weird bug-like monsters in it for the most part.
Yeah, they were all sort of insectoids.
But the spiders in it had like skull faces or something, didn't they?
Yeah, they were twisted. They had weird exoskeleton things going on.
Yeah, and they spit acidic webbing.
They were like the worst possible thing you could imagine as far as like a creature goes.
Yeah.
You know, because it preys on like everything.
Yeah.
Everything you could possibly like not
it's
want to come into
contact
with.
Too many legs.
With. Yeah.
It's large.
Yeah, it's huge. It's bigger than the common household spider.
The thing is,
like,
it's not so big that it's like, because at a certain point, it gets so big that it's no longer scary.
Yeah.
You know.
It becomes somewhat ludicrous.
Yeah.
Or it's just.
Or it's just like, you can't be scared of it because it can't sneak up on you.
Yeah, yeah.
But these spiders were big enough that they're freaky and small enough that they could totally sneak up on you.
They were like the size of a large cat
or
a medium-sized dog or something.
They had spindly legs and they had a skull face.
Ugh. Spit the acid.
And they were mean.
And they would they were aggressive and they would cocoon you and plant baby spiders inside you. And
listeners with a queasy disposition, do not listen to this part. because they bred.
They would literally make your skin crawl because it'd be crawling with your baby little spiders.
Pustules on your body, and they'd pop open with little baby spiders. That's like the sound they made, but many times over.
And aggressive.
Yeah, super
They're
aggressive.
They're like angry.
And and they were fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'd throw these like silk like webbing out, you know, just a string of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it would float gently to the floor, seemingly innocuous, but no.
Like just a regular web, but if it touched
your
skin,
made of
acid. It would burn you. It would burn right through your flesh.
It would cut your arm off.
Yeah.
It would sever your arm if it went across your arm.
Hideous things, horrifying.
Good monsters though.
Great monsters, yeah.
Excellent.
And then there were all sorts of things. There were some sort of moth-like creatures in that cuz they were attracted to the light of the store.
Yeah,
there
were more like big wasps or hornets, right? I mean, because they would sting you. One dude got stung and his face, you know, then his neck was swollen to the point that it just, you know, no longer had a neck. There was some form of tentacled monster.
Yeah, which you never really see.
But that's what made it so cool.
Yeah, you just see the tentacle. You can imagine whatever that tentacle is attached to.
Yeah,
is probably
who knows?
Because
the tentacle
disgusting.
Itself had like... not teeth, but
yeah, no, it had little
pincers or
or like there was some
teeth.
Sharp item thing on the end of the thing. It wasn't just like a flap.
Yeah,
tentacle,
it wasn't
like,
a
it was
octopi
more threatening than that. Yeah,
octopus tentacle.
Yeah,
it was it had spikes at the end.
And then there was the giant thing, which you just sort of catch a glimpse of, but like which everyone sort of links to the AT-AT. I feel like.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
with six legs though.
But with six legs and sort of weird.
Yeah,
they had tentacles too.
Tendrils, I would call them.
Yeah, maybe more tendrils than tentacles. Yeah.
And that one wasn't scary.
Really?
Did you find it scary?
I find the implication of it scary, and I think that's why they sort of leave it for. We're totally blowing this movie. We're totally spoiling this movie anybody who's ever not seen it.
Go see it. Go see it. Look, if you haven't seen The Mist, see it because it's good.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, we're not blowing everything. We're just talking about monsters
here.
But
the monsters,
look, folks, there's monsters in the movie. You should know that.
You might get the impression from watching trailers for The Mist that it's a movie about monsters.
But we won't talk about any plot. We're not talking about any plot things.
Right. No, just talking about the monsters.
But yeah, this giant monster, I did not find it scary. It was just, I understand what you say though, with the implication of it.
Yeah. The fact that it's, it's such a huge,
what else is out there sort of thing. Right.
Right. Well, it implies, like if this thing is just walking around in our world, then we are pretty much
boned,
lost. Yeah. Like there's no way we're going to be able to fight this thing.
Yeah.
Especially if there's more of them.
Yeah, yeah. This is just one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That is an excellent monster movie.
It's a great movie.
And it's a good movie.
Speaking
all
of like monster movie, like modern monster movies, like as far modern as you can go, like probably one of the best recent monster movies, without a doubt. What are some other like modern creature
I thought you were gonna say Attack the Block.
Oh well, yeah, okay.
Which is another
Attack
one.
The Block
again.
Wherever you're going, I'm coming with you.
No way, man. She's bare annoying. Make her leave. Let her snitch get murked.
Dennis, man, I need the nurse. Do you want me to die?
You can't stand around here arguing. We need to roll now.
My name's Sam.
Jerome.
I'm Pursed.
No, man.
Dennis.
You're Moses, right?
Gonna need a weapon.
Attack the Block was made in England.
Yeah.
In London. And
ye old England.
It's about an alien invasion in South London.
Yeah.
And the only people there to combat the alien invasion are some
South Londoners.
Some gang kids.
Yeah. Thugs.
Yeah.
Thugs.
Really young though, like
street urchins.
Real early teens
kids.
And it is an excellent film for a lot of reasons, but one of the great things about it is the monsters in it.
Fantastic monster design.
Especially in recent times.
Yeah.
I mean, they're these furry ape slash wolf like
they're ambiguous.
Creatures. Yeah.
Like, they're sort of
I think what works so well is that there are recognizable aspects of them.
Right. And they have glowing eyes. They have sharp teeth.
Glowing teeth. And they don't, you can't see their eyes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Just the teeth.
Only thing you can... The only defining aspect is the teeth.
Yeah.
Everything else is silhouette. They are pitch black.
Yeah.
You can only see silhouette. And they're clearly furry.
And their proportions are sort of hard to gauge. Yeah, they're
very strange. And they run...
Yeah,
at a really there's this interesting lope that they have as they move,
and they can cling to things.
There's a great sound design going on with them because they make this high pitched, almost digital at times kind of noise. It's just a really and having watched the special features.
Oh,
huh? Callback. The special features on the disc. I learned that. The majority of it is all practical effects. It's a guy in a suit.
Which is amazing.
Doing that monster, running like that and stuff. And all they did digitally was they, you know, wiped all the definition out. So it was pitch black except for the teeth. And they also did effects for the mouth so that had more glow to it and could kind of...
enhanced.
Yeah, be enhanced that way. But those are awesome, otherworldly... I think that, that's what works is like they're otherworldly, but also familiar.
Yeah.
And so you can be afraid familiar of them.
Elements.
Because you can understand what's dangerous about them. But
you don't know to what extent
exactly.
those go. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Are there other recent examples that you can think of?
There are two big ones that sort of follow in the same pattern, different approaches to each of them. But the sort of giant monster that was popularized by Godzilla. Kind of had a renaissance over the last few years. First, I think with The Host,
the
Korean, South Korean movie, which sort of takes it is about a family.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about the monster.
That's the cool. Okay, so let's talk about that because one thing that makes monsters scary is that there's someone to be scared of them.
Yeah,
and I think when those characters are well developed. And seem very real, the monsters are that much scarier.
Yeah.
When the focus isn't on the monster.
Right.
It's on the people.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a movie with a monster. It's not a monster movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so The Host is about a family who get caught up in this sort of... their daughter gets kidnapped, essentially, by this monster. And so they go out to try and get her back. And the cool thing about... that movie is that the filmmakers were really smart and never capturing the monster on film necessarily. You were always catching pieces of it.
Right.
It was never like they never pulled out the camera and just put it right on the monster.
Yeah. You never see the monster in totality.
Yeah.
Like in its entirety.
You get glimpses of it. You see it out of focus, you know, far off in shot. You see it sort of a piece of it in frame. And so your mind starts to build a picture of it, which is really great. And it feels more real, you know, when you're just barely seeing it, you know, you're almost catching it in frame.
Yeah. Which was sort of like, I think one of the points of that movie or what they tried to do is make it like a first person viewpoint, you know, where you're not actually seeing or even relating it to like real events, not necessarily monster related, but just disaster events, you know, where you're not getting a full picture, which is kind of the same thing that J.J. Abrams and
Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard. Okay.
Yeah.
What they did with Cloverfield,
which
is another recent giant monster. Again, you're sort
really
of,
giant.
Yeah, huge. Like and again, like the proportions on that thing were sort of hard to figure too.
Yeah,
and I remember that even being like a criticism of the movie. Like some people were sort of, well, it seemed the scale of the monster to the buildings around it seemed to change throughout the movie. But again, you know, you're following a core group of people that are sort of your protagonists. You're not on this like omnipotent level, like a government agency who's watching over everything and has all of this knowledge. You only know what these people know, and they're just regular dudes, and they're, you know, running around trying to stay away from this thing.
Yeah,
and that it works to a certain degree, and to a certain degree it doesn't work. It only goes It's only as successful as the movie is willing to make you like the people that you're with. And I feel like it was the family in the host was much more likable.
Oh, yeah, they're
than
awesome.
The Bacardi commercial people who you're supposed to follow in Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And you know, to their credit, like I think they take probably the most palpable narrative thread that you could have with a bunch of strangers that you may or may not like. Yeah. And that is like, you know, the main guy is trying to save his best friend, maybe more than best friend.
Yeah.
Who's trapped. And that's really the only like plot point that you have is that he's trying to save her. She's trapped and he's trying to save her.
It's a difficult proposition because, you know, the whole idea was to only let the narrative be seen through the eyes of that camera, the you know, home video.
Yeah.
And so the only way you could get a story across about his previous experience with that girl was through the previous video that being shot on it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it kind of worked. It kind of didn't, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it was successful in as much as it made a previously a concept, a monster concept that was sort of old hat at that point.
Yeah.
You know, like people had sort of exhausted the idea of a giant monster movie.
It didn't
at that
seem
point.
Scary anymore.
Right. And this one made it relevant again.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to some degree, there's some pretty scary moments in there.
Yeah, I agree. And I won't talk about, some of the particulars in there.
The
because
best scenario we should definitely not talk about.
Yeah, because I think that there are some surprises. You know, you go into that movie not really knowing much about the monster unless you've read up on it, you know. But there are other elements that you can't possibly expect because you're going in there thinking, oh, it's a monster movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they have some cool surprises.
Great stuff.
What
about recent, but not totally recent, but within the past 20 to 30 years?
230.
Movie monsters.
Late 20th century.
Or monsters, do we have to keep it in the movies?
I don't know, maybe we don't. What are you insinuating?
Cryptozoological
beings. Mean like real monsters.
Real monsters,
ostensibly
yeah. The ones
real
that we
monsters.
That we all experience in life.
Yeah, yeah.
Bigfoot.
Teachers. Oh, got it, right. Sasquatch.
Loch Ness.
Nessie. Loch Ness monster.
Momo the monster.
Right, right. Missouri monster.
Chupacabra.
El Chupacabra.
El Chupacabra.
What else is there? There's the Jersey Devil.
The Jersey Devil. There's,
these are all sort of like urban legend monsters too, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They are. The giant squid was one of them.
But he's real.
He's been proven, yeah.
We saw one.
Sort of.
Not you and I, but.
Right, yeah.
We as a human.
Found him on a beach.
As the human race.
What's that? Just a giant squid. Throw it back.
What? We found him. Hey, everybody. Hey, it's not a myth anymore. Who are these guys?
I think they have a podcast.
What else is there?
there's a Mothman.
The Mothman.
The Mothman.
My dad likes the Mothman.
Oh yeah.
Well, he doesn't like the Mothman. He made up a superhero called Mothman.
Oh.
That he always asks me to draw. Mothman.
I like that. Just be having a conversation with your dad, and he's like, "Hey, draw Mothman."
All right, Dad.
Are there any others?
There's lots of them.
There are tons of cryptozoological creatures.
Say that word again.
Cryptozoological.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite cryptozoological creature?
Boy, that's a very good question.
Is it the Chupacabra?
I love the name El Chupacabra.
It's fun to say Chupacabra.
He's the goat sucker, right?
Whoa.
Isn't that his actual, like...
He does.
I don't know if that's the actual, like, literal translation.
I think that's what he does, though.
Um,
yeah, who knows if that's the translation.
Right, but that's
that he's a chupacabra.
He's associated with the term goat sucker because the El Chupacabra.
Chupacabra. He sucks the blood of a goat.
Out of goats.
Right? Yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
All of it.
Every last drop.
Yeah.
And he makes crop circles.
There have been a lot of... I mean, I guess this goes for all these, but there's... It seems like recently there's been some sightings and some photos taken of chupacabras.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was some, you know, absurd article in some website that claimed that this guy had found the chupacabra and that he there were photos, and I was like, this is not real.
This is not a real chupacabra.
I emailed them and said, this is not real chupacabra.
Did you embed your voice saying that?
Is this recording?
This is good. Not a real please play attachment.
Chupacabra.
Chupacabra. Yeah, well, and then there was also, there've been a rash of Sasquatch or Bigfoot claims.
Though that has been revealed as a hoax.
Yeah, it was.
By the guys who did it.
Yeah, they admitted it.
Which is sad. I think some magic went out of the world.
Yeah, it bothers me when things are, well, it bothers me when things are disproven. But what bothers me more is when things are... attributed things like cryptozoological phenomena are attributed to hoaxes,
dudes
in particular.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer. I mean, I don't know if I ever really believed that Bigfoot was real,
right?
But it was neat to think that it could be.
Yeah, I would rather not have a definitive answer than have a definitive answer that sucks.
How awesome would it have been if somebody had found a Bigfoot?
Yeah.
In real life.
What would be even more awesome is if while those guys were on a stage admitting to the fact
that they were Bigfoot.
Like, actually, Bigfoot is a hoax, and we are responsible for perpetrating.
I have something to say about that.
And he's in the audience.
He's in a suit, and he's got like a pen. And... Sorry, no questions, no questions. Just one.
I'm real.
Oh, the Yeti. The Yeti, who's sort of like the Arctic Bigfoot.
Yeah, the cousin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The Abominable Snowman.
Yeah.
Is the Yeti the same as the Abominable... Sorry, can I say that again?
Yeah.
Is the Yeti the same as the Abominable Snowman? Or does he just live in colder climes?
I think it depends on who you ask.
The Abominable Snowman is absolutely Arctic.
Well, the snowman would have to be Arctic, I think.
One would assume.
Yeah, or at least in some place that's snowy all the time.
The Yeti? Is it? Is he found in normal climates?
No, he's typically associated with icy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Who would you rather hang out with? Bigfoot?
Bigfoot or the Yeti?
Or the Yeti?
Abominable snowman?
Given that they would be friendly.
Okay, so we're assuming they are of a kind disposition,
yeah.
Rather than a I'm gonna cut your throat with my 50-foot paw,
right?
That is a tough call because I like neither the woods nor the cold, but I guess I'm gonna go with the Yeti because I think the Yeti. I think the Yeti could come in handy. Like, I mean, he could act as like a sled. He's a big furry sled.
Yeah.
You could like sit on his stomach and slide down hillsides.
He'd love that.
He would love it. He would be.
This is so fun.
Yeah.
There were some scientists trying to figure out the Sasquatch riddle. Then they figured out it was a missing link. In search of Sasquatch, that was a kick-ass in search of, with Leonard Nimoy kicking out the jams. He captured imaginations of people all around the globe. His name was Sasquatch, so I'm told. His legend's ancient in the ancient scribe.
Okay.
So let's. So movie monsters, getting back to that.
Yeah, let's go back there.
20 to 30 years, in the past 20, 30 years.
We've seen some great monsters.
There's been some crazy monsters.
Yeah.
And they're the sort of slasher film version of monsters, right?
Right, right. Which sort of bring things back a little bit to the humanoid.
Yeah, the form. Humanoid form. Mm-hmm. Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Jason Voorhees.
Yes.
Voorhees.
Voorhees.
And Michael Myers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The triumvirate, the triad.
It depends on your perspective. Well, it depends on your point of view. Go. Because okay. The triumvirate, maybe it's Jason, Michael Myers, and Freddy, or maybe it's Leatherface and Jason and Freddy, or maybe it's Freddy, Pinhead, and Chucky. Brother.
Well,
or you know, I mean that the slasher realm is kind of nebulous there. But yeah, okay.
I think on a broad mainstream. Cut a swath across the general population's awareness of the slasher beings.
Right.
I would assume it's Freddy, Jason, Voorhees, and Michael Myers. And Mike Myers, the actor from Canada.
You'd be correct, I think. But those are the ones that have the most movies. Credited to them, so it stands to reason that
if the reason isn't like they're the most well-known or they have the best movies or they're the best monsters, they just have the most.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about popular recognition, yeah. I think that
there's
says
a large
right
quantity
there.
Of
the number of films that are associated with their character is far and away a higher than the other ones.
The first Freddy movie that I saw. I was being babysat by my brother and sister, and it was past my bedtime. That you know, they had put me to bed or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I snuck.
You killed the babysitter and then got out of bed.
No, the babysitters are my brother and sister.
Oh, okay.
They're babysitting me, and they put me to bed. They were like, "Go to bed."
Yeah,
you know. But I snuck.
Very effective.
Go to bed.
babysitting tactics. Okay.
I snuck out of bed and sort of creeped down the hall to see, you know, what they were watching. Mm-hmm. They're watching a Freddy movie.
Okay.
I can't remember which one, but I remember being scared out of my mind and I ran back to my bedroom.
How much of it did you watch?
Not much. I think I saw a hand come out of a bed or something.
Oh.
And I couldn't take it.
It's just a hand. It was just.
Well, I think it was the...
The glove.
The glove.
And Freddy Krueger.
And here's an interesting thing. So I was very scared. I never watched any of the Freddy movies as a kid because of that.
Okay.
Because it scared me out of my mind.
Sure.
But I thought that glove was really cool.
Yeah.
And so I saw at a toy store a glove that, you know, a plastic with plastic blades on it. And so I got my... mom or dad to buy it for me, and I had a toy box as a kid, you know, and it was just a big cardboard box.
I can see where this is going.
That I kept it in, that I kept all my toys in, right? And so once I got that toy, you know, I played with it, and it was awesome. I had this, like, bladed thing. I had no idea what Freddy's backstory was or anything like that. I knew nothing about the character. All I knew is that he had this glove. And I'm sure I didn't even pretend to be Freddy when I had it. I probably just...
You were just like...
Messed around
glove
with
guy.
It. Yeah, glove guy. For good. I was
Captain Blade Glove.
Here comes Blood... Hey, it's Glove Guy. He's here to help. with his glove. Step aside. I'll handle this. I kept it in the toy box.
Uh-huh.
And at night, I would be scared out of my mind... That I would see it come
just
crawling
knowing
out.
Knowing that it was in there?
I thought it was going to crawl out.
Oh.
And it's plastic. But I was afraid of it. I was afraid of the glove that I bought. My toy. in my toy box.
No, that's not all that hard to imagine. I had similar things that like I was fascinated with and had to own, had to acquire.
Yeah.
Like there were several, like there was a Madball. Do you remember Madballs? Yeah. And one of them like just had this horrid like crack in its skull, and you could see the brains coming out. And I was like, oh, I wanted that. That's awesome. And then immediately it freaked me out.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't look at it. I could not. Could not continue to stare at it. And my mom was like, "We just bought it." And
I picture you getting home and like look at it for a second, then you just put it away.
I didn't even make it that far. Like we get into the car and I open up the bag and I'm like, ah, and then put it down and I won't even go. I won't even touch the bag anymore.
That's amazing.
That is funny. I don't remember when I first started getting into Freddy, but you're right. Like the concept of the glove, like it's so good. Yeah. It's really compelling.
Yeah.
And so is. I think you could say like the character for Jason Voorhees, the fact that he wears this hockey mask, those little pieces of their character, I think, are appealing when you're a kid.
Yeah. And,
but for me, what was most appealing about any of those stories was the lineage of the characters, the backstories of them. Because initially, when I first started to become aware of them, I hadn't seen the movies. You know, I didn't know anything. And even when I started seeing the movies, like I was coming in midway, you know, this is like the end of the 80s and these series have been going for, you know, 5-10 years now.
Yeah.
So I'm coming in at the midpoint, you know, at best, if not the end. And so I wasn't even following them through from the beginning. But I loved the fact that Freddy not only had this, you know, the movie series had this progression.
Mm-hmm.
You had like the Freddy character had sort of evolved in terms of his legend in the setting of the story. But then in addition to that, he had all of this backstory that's never actually depicted in the movie,
right.
But it's referenced very exhaustively. They were almost like comic books. They were like comic book movies before there were superhero movies, where you had this continuity strung together, and the adherence to the continuity was so absurd, given that these movies were made, you know, they were made for as cheap, you know, as cheaply as possible, churned out as quickly as possible, and basically targeted at like horny teenagers.
Yeah.
And that was it. But yet they had this such a strict adherence to the character's continuity and maintaining the integrity of the character. And it's funny because once they were successful all through that, like as long as they were true to the character. And then once they started to finally say like, you know, who cares? Just put the guy in the hockey mask, have him kill people. And that's when people started saying they were crap.
Yeah,
you know,
that's you're when right.
Suddenly the fan base was not there space. Anymore. Yeah. They all went up into space. God, it's
crazy.
Did
Freddy go to space?
Freddy did not, but Jason went into space. Pinhead went into space.
Wow.
The leprechaun went into space.
I can remember watching a trailer for Freddy, Nightmare on Elm Street. It was 3 or 4, I think. Mm-hmm. And I thought they showed one part in the trailer that looked awesome to me. And it was this guy, like the kids in the movie figured out, okay, we have fight him in our dreams. Like,
yeah,
he can make things happen in dreams. We can too, because there are dreams.
This is the Dream Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like they showed a clip of this nerdy guy.
Oh, the Wizard Master.
He made himself into a wizard. Wasn't it like in cartoons?
In my dreams, I am the Wizard Master. Yeah.
It was so great.
Yeah, and he's got like animated lightning coming out of his fingers. And
I was
stuff.
Like, I really wanted to see it for that part of it, but I couldn't because I knew that wasn't going to be...
You were terrified of the rest of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. The well, that actually like is another, I think, element about those movies that like worked for them, at least for the time, is that there was like that element of empowerment, you know, where it was sort of like no adult audience is going to accept any of this bullshit, you know, like they're just not going to, they're gonna walk out of there and be like, man, that is stupid, you know. But like if you're a kid,
yeah,
you know, you're like, yeah, turn me into a wizard, yeah, you know,
wizard master,
right?
Let's get that right.
Yeah.
I never watched, I to this day have not watched a Jason movie. Friday the 13th. Yeah.
Just because you've never happened across it, never had any desire
to. You know, they all were lumped into, as a kid for me, like, too scary to watch. And at this point, I just haven't come across it. I did watch Halloween at one point.
Okay.
And with all of them, you know, watching them now, I'm like, man, there's nothing really scary about these things.
I would beg to differ, at least in the instance of the first Halloween. I consider that separate from the rest of the series.
I was not. Yeah. Again, I'm watching in the light of day, you know, with the context of.
Well, yeah, after 20 years of the sort of tropes having been
beaten
to death, so. I could sort of see that. But I think Halloween is like a work of art. Yeah. Like that's sort of like the Citizen Kane of slasher movies to me. It is. I like the compositions of the shots and everything. I think it's just really well done. It's very, and the music is fantastic.
What's that mask he's wearing?
It's actually a William Shatner mask.
Really?
I'm serious. Yeah. That's it is awesome. A doctored William Shatner Halloween mask.
Impressive.
That was like touched up. They whitened it out. And
wow.
Yeah, how about that?
So there were also around the same time, maybe getting more into the 80s, late 80s, some monster flicks coming out. You had stuff like Critters.
Oh, yeah.
Troll.
Yeah.
Troll 2.
Troll, the original Harry Potter. The character, the main character, and as a kid named Harry Potter.
right. Yeah, I've never seen it again.
It's terrible.
It's yeah, terrible movie. But I feel like these are things that one should see. But and I'm not putting this in the group in that group, but it makes me think of this as the Gremlins.
Yeah. Well, I would say it's sort of. It's still in that group,
but it's a good version of those.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of the first, like Critters and
child friendly version too.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, now we look at it and we're like, okay, sure, that's a family movie. Well, but I think at the time it was sort of notorious.
Yeah, but in the way that movies at that time, you know, the family-friendly line was really strange, I feel like, at that point in time when that came out and other movies like it were coming out. And I feel that this seemed to the ratings... You know, the rating committee or whatever they're called.
The Motion Picture Association of America.
Oh. Seem to let things go a bit more. They seem more lenient.
Well, they were sort of in a predicament where Spielberg actually, I mean, and this is sort of like, there are probably nothing specific on the books about this, but like Poltergeist came out in 1982 and it was... It didn't necessarily meet all the criteria of like an R-rated movie, but it obviously wasn't what you would call like a Disney flick. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's like guys peeling their faces off, and there's corpses coming out of swimming pools. There's some like graphic stuff in there. And then I think after that, there was Temple of Doom, hearts getting pulled out of chests, and snakes and people eating you know, various bugs and things. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gremlins came after those, and Gremlins was the first PG-13 movie.
Oh.
They actually created the PG-13 rating for Gremlins.
Nice.
Because it was so, like, borderline, you know.
But I watched it, I mean, and I imagine you did too, it as a kid.
Oh, well, yeah, because it was marketed at kids. Yeah. I mean, they had those records at McDonald's where you would
Gizmo,
go
Gizmo, for goodness sakes, was a little... You wanted Gizmo.
People decry the Ewoks for, you know, like throwing off the Return of the Jedi, you know, like George Lucas just commercializing the saga, you know, just to sell teddy bears.
Yeah.
But Gizmo was like a stuffed animal from the get-go.
But he was awesome.
Yeah, he was great. He had personality.
He had a lot of attitude too. Yeah. He was sort of
kind of driving that race car.
He's a bit of a jerk a lot of the time. You know, like he totally didn't take things sitting down.
Yeah. Yeah,
what are the
sort of impulsive.
What are the rules?
Oh, don't feed them after midnight is the big one. but
don't get them wet.
Don't expose them to bright light and don't get them wet.
Bright light. I always forget about the bright light. Bright light. Bright
that's
light.
Sort of that's like layer one.
Do
that's
the voice. Level do the, one. Can you do the voice?
Oh, I can't. I got the cold.
Bright light.
Hold on.
Can, is that it? Bright light. Bright light. Bright light. Bright wait, let me try it.
All right.
Bright light. Bright light. Bright light. Billy. Did he say his name? I'm working. That's incredible. You did that so wonderfully. Oh, I forgot about his little song.
Which means nothing. Oh, I mean, it's so, so great, what a, though. What a throwaway thing. Like, it doesn't have any relevance to the movie.
But it makes him, no, it makes him.
It humanizes him, or, you know, it makes
him good. You're like, this is a good little guy, you know? There's nothing to be feared about this little guy that's singing a fun song.
Right. And so you let down your guard.
Yeah. So let's talk about the no eating after midnight rule.
Okay.
Where's the cutoff? When is it no longer that. After midnight?
In Gremlins 2, they talk about it. Yeah.
I guess they resolve it?
Well, they sort of, I think they kind of were mocking Gremlins 1, or mocking the arguments against Gremlins 1. Like, there were a lot of those logistical things that came out of it. Like, you know, well, it's midnight in Paris, but it's still 6 a.m. in...
Well, one would... Okay, I can... Like, the the rational explanation there is the sun, right? Like,
right.
The sun, once the sun... Wherever you are on Earth...
Uh-huh.
When the sun is on the opposite side,
right? Sure,
that's from midnight. You. That's midnight, right? Yeah. For you,
yeah.
So wherever that little Mogwai is,
but what you're saying is, so like, when can they start?
It's
eating
always
again?
After midnight,
right? Yeah.
Technically,
you know, I had not even thought about that until now. I've been watching that movie probably once a year for like 25 years. Never even occurred to me.
The you know, time, or at least tracking time, is a human construct.
Yeah.
And so it's arbitrary. So it's always after midnight. So does it just mean the most recent midnight?
I don't know.
And when does it no longer become, when are we safe? That was...
I think it's until like you wake up, until your waking hour.
Yeah.
Because I think the
waking hour.
The gremlins were supposed to be...
when you wake up or when the Mogwai wakes up?
Maybe when the Mogwai wakes up. Yeah. You know, I think that's the idea of the day sort of ending at bedtime and beginning at when you wake up.
So if he wakes up at 12:05,
no midnight snack, no, or after midnight snack. Yeah.
So if he goes to sleep at 11:55,
yeah,
he wakes up at 12:05.
Can't eat.
1 a.m.
No.
2.
No.
3.
I don't, unless he's a nocturnal Mogwai.
I don't think you're going to eat 3, 4. No.
No.
5?
Maybe.
I'll give him 5 o'clock.
I'm going to give him 5 o'clock too, because at that point, Billy's dad's probably up and getting ready. You know, he's using the bathroom, buddy. You got a bad case of dragon breath.
Do it again. But he'd be a good alarm clock.
Yeah, he would. Yeah, if you could ever get to sleep from him singing.
But Gizmo wasn't the monster in that movie. Mm. The gremlins were, and they were gross. You know, what was grossest thing is when they'd get wet. When Gizmo got wet, no big deal.
It was just furry
fur balls.
Yeah.
But when they did, like, these gross bubbles formed on their backs.
Of course.
It looked painful.
They didn't have any fur. Where was the fur ball going to come from?
Oh, gosh. It was horrifying.
They were, literally, like, going back to, like, the mist spiders. Yeah. They had little pustules.
No good. We don't like pustules around here.
And we don't. Or we don't like things popping out of.
And they were intent upon multiplying.
Right.
And causing mayhem.
Mischief.
So awesome.
Yeah.
They were really and they were dangerous. They scratch you and attack you and electrocute
you. They were somewhat
you.
Gleefully mischievous.
Yeah.
And
is Gremlins 1 the one where they mess with the film?
No, that was in the second one.
Where it's Snow White.
They do. The film gets messed up in the first one in the theater. That's how
they do the bunny like the
yeah
the shadow puppets.
Well, or do they? I don't remember if they do the shadow puppets in the theater.
Damn it!
In the second one they do. There's a a moment where they get into the projection booth whatever, and then they mess it up. Yeah, that's the second one.
That's
the
second one?
Yeah, and then they're doing the... Yeah. And there's a version of it. This is cool, too. There was a different version that was shot specifically for home video, where instead of the film strip breaking...
Oh, it was the magnetic tape?
It's like they get into the tape, and it all goes to snow. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah. The version I always saw, I saw that on cable, I think, the first time, and it was the film version with Hulk Hogan.
Yes, I remember
Hulk Hogan. Hey, listen up, you little gremlins. These people came here to watch this movie, and then they want to eat their popcorn and drink their soda pop, and they don't want you messing with the movie.
Did he rip his shirt apart?
Yeah, he did. He's like, I'll come up to that projection booth.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, those movies are fantastic. I really do believe that Gremlins is... one of the greatest movies I've ever seen.
It's an excellent film.
Yeah.
The sequel is pretty good, too.
It's a phenomenal sequel, and it's one of those where
Even though I think the sequel is much less scary, you know, it's much more of comedy.
Yeah, it becomes a spoof of itself. Yeah. They're spoofing the
But it's really good. The Gremlin characters in the sequel, you've got a lot more specific characters that are pretty cool to see.
They're allowed to stretch out. They're sort of, they become more individual monsters rather than just this mass of the same crazy.
Yeah, one, because in the first one you have the one, is it Spike or the Mohawk? Yeah. Or
Stripe.
Stripe.
Yeah.
Stripe.
I think there's a Spike.
Spike
in the
is in the
one.
Second one.
Yeah. Stripe is in the
Stripe
first one.
Stripe had, and he had a Mohawk, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Big white Mohawk.
That's so cool.
But the rest of them were all basically like a hive brain, just sort of running rampant around the town.
And Spike's tied Gizmo up, right? Yeah. To the train set.
Tied him to the train set. I think put him up on the dartboard.
Man.
Threw darts. Yeah. Oh,
why did he hate Gizmo?
They were mean. That's interesting. They never really explore that.
They always
just
hate Gizmo.
They sort of tease at it, but they always do hate Gizmo.
Interestingly, Gizmo as the fuzzy Mogwai version is he's fine. Like he's not mean or evil.
Right.
But all the others are already mischievous and
Never a good gremlin.
They seem to want to even when they're before they're gremlins.
Oh
proper,
yeah, when they're Mogwai.
They
yeah.
seem to want to be gremlins.
Yeah.
Like they're trying their damnedest to become gremlins.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's that great scene in the first one where Stripe as a Mogwai, they're all playing that little Donkey Kong thing.
Yes.
They're also there, and he just spits on Gizmo.
Yes.
And...
Oh man.
Yeah.
I remember when they eat the chicken, in that the chicken looks so gross.
It's disgusting. Yeah. There are a lot of really just grotesque moments in those movies, and wonderfully so.
Oh man.
They really play it up and do well. There was a whole outgrowth from Gremlins. Like, that was a big hit. And then suddenly you had, Critters.
Yeah.
And Ghoulies was another one, which had, the famous, the shot of the toilet and that little green head. I mean, it was a direct ripoff of Gremlins.
Uh-huh.
But it had this, toilet bowl and this little guy coming out of the toilet bowl. And it was, I think the tagline was, it's like Ghoulies. They'll get you in the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
or something
yeah.
Like that.
Oh, I get it.
And Critters.
I picked
it
up. I get it.
All those little, little guys.
I get it.
The other, sort of, the beginning of the 80s was, all about the Gremlins. And then I feel like the end of the 80s the on the monster spectrum totally belonged to Tremors.
Yes.
The Graboids.
Well, did it belong to it? I mean... I always felt like there was something of a unknown, not well known. What's the word?
An obscure.
It was. I always felt that it was something of an obscure film.
I don't know. I remember going to see it and there being four people in the theater. But when you mention that movie, everybody
I think now
it loves it. Yeah,
I think. But I feel like even when I would talk about it, nobody knew what I was talking about.
Maybe took some, took a little while to gain traction.
It's a really cool movie.
It is cool. Yeah.
I think my favorite monster movies have a really good blend of comedy and scares.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that makes the scary stuff scarier.
Yeah.
And because it's a release. You know, you've got two types of release. You've got being frightened is a release of tension, and laughing is a release of tension. So I think they go hand in hand really well.
Yeah.
So that's why movies like Tremors, Gremlins, Attack the Block I think are some of my favorites because they sort of walk that line.
Yeah. Well, and that's sort of like they play off of each other. So
yeah.
When you're laughing, you're less, you're more vulnerable yeah. to a sudden scare, yeah. you know? And likewise, when you're, you know, on the edge of your seat and you're freaking out,
mm-hmm.
something like completely absurd is that much more likely to make you laugh,
yeah.
you know? So they really work together well.
Tremors had a great cast in it, and it was a nice, you know, they're in this remote part of what state were they in?
It was like Utah or something like Nevada. That. It was somewhere out like west. Southwestern. Yeah,
and they had the creatures were really cool, graboids.
Yeah,
I love the name. Like,
yeah, and they don't use that term in the movie, do they?
They do. Well, the guy who owns the general shop.
Uh-huh.
He's
the guy
sitting
from
there
Family
with
Ties?
No, it's okay. Not Michael Gross. It's he's an Asian guy and he did quite a few films and he would often play this kind of stereotypical like mystical Asian guy, but in this movie he was just this shop owner. And he's sitting at a table, they're all sort of holed up in the shop
mm-hmm.
trying to, you know, not make a whole lot of noise so that the graboids don't come and get them. But he and this kid who lives in town, like a teenager, are both like trying to figure out how they can make money off of this whole thing.
Oh, okay.
And they're like, we need to come up with a name. And they're listing things off. And like, meanwhile, the other part of the group is trying to figure out how to get out of the city or out of the village, uh-huh. the town or whatever. And suddenly you hear the shopkeeper, I got it! Graboids! And then I don't think they mention it at all from that in the rest of the movie.
Uh-huh.
But then I think in Tremors 2, when they go find Earl
uh-huh.
to help them with a new graboid infestation, he's got a graboids arcade game in his trailer.
Tremors 2. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not horrible.
Huh.
It's got some interesting stuff to it. But yeah, those were basically giant slugs almost that mm-hmm. kind of moved through the ground.
Again, sort of like they always reminded me of the sandworm from Beetlejuice. Yeah.
Well, and they were kind of Jaws almost in the earth.
But in the earth, yeah. Yeah, I never thought about that.
It's a monster you can't see until it's right in front of you.
Yeah,
you know. Late. And they have these weird beaks, and they had tongues that had their own mouths on.
Oh yeah. Kind of like the alien.
Yes.
The xenomorph. Yeah.
The xenomorph.
The xenomorph. Well played. What a ridiculous name.
What? It makes perfect sense.
It does. No, it's just... It's,
doesn't
it's,
it?
Sounds goofy to me.
I don't know that it makes xenomorph. Perfect sense. No, again, that was used once in Aliens.
Do they actually use that word?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, see, I thought that was just like H.R. Giger's
It's used in Aliens when the Marines are all about to go down onto the planet
mm-hmm.
and the sergeant is giving the, or the lieutenant maybe is telling them what to expect, what mm-hmm. could be down there. And I don't know who says it. It's either the lieutenant. It's not Ripley. I don't think mm-hmm. but somebody calls them xenomorphs.
Interesting. Is it Paul Reiser?
It might be Paul Reiser.
I could see Paul Reiser doing that. Reiser could make up a word like that.
It might have been Paul Reiser.
That sounds like a Paul Reiser word.
He's great in that movie.
He's a fantastic slime ball.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
So good. So palpably jerky. Yeah.
And the aliens are also good monsters.
Yeah, that's a great creature design.
Skeletal. Mm-hmm. They have like a carapace. It's, you know, like, it's bug armor. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's absurd way to define it. They had the sharp tail thing and mm-hmm. they've got acid
and
from
acid.
Blood.
There we come back to acid again.
The second mouth
mm-hmm.
in the mouth. Like they open their mouth and another
and
mouth
another
shoots
mouth.
Out.
And it's yeah. Like a pulverizing
like,
mouth.
Hey, everybody.
Like it can like break bones.
Yeah,
it
doesn't
and stuff.
Talk.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the pupil.
The face hugger.
The face hugger thing, yeah.
Who injects the baby alien inside of your body. Again, let's...
Yeah.
So something coming out
that's
of the body.
That bio creep.
Parasite.
Bio creep out.
Bio creep thing. Out.
Yeah.
punches through your chest.
Mm-hmm.
The chest.
And then it sings.
I think they call him like a chest puncher or something. Hello, my honey. It's a different movie. So you've got the main aliens guys, you have the facehuggers, and then you've got the queen.
The queen.
The queen aliens, giant version of the alien. She's got a bunch of arms, big egg sack behind her.
Yeah.
Pumping out eggs relentlessly.
You know what the only fault with the queen alien design is, at least to me, like, she seems so immobile.
Yeah.
In that, when you are first introduced to her, and then, you know, from then on, she's like climbing towers.
She moves fast too.
Yeah, yeah.
It is. It's a hard leap to make because she does seem totally stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And when she does separate herself from the egg sack, it's kind of hard to believe that she moves as fast as she does.
Yeah, seems like more or less.
Especially because she's so big.
Yeah,
like
she's hulking.
It'd be hard to navigate, it seems.
Yeah,
but.
And to, like, sneak aboard a shuttlecraft or whatever.
Well, what's incredible, and this is a spoiler, so pause or skip forward if you haven't seen Aliens and you plan on it.
Yeah.
But there's the moment at the very end when Ripley's talking to Bishop, the robot the android man. And she's like, I'm so glad you came back and saved us, and this is great, and we're friends now. And suddenly, the queen shows up. Like, there's no way she would have snuck. I guess she actually crawls out of the wheel well or the landing gear of the ship. So they do rationalize, like, why Ripley didn't see a giant queen alien behind him when it attacked. But it still seemed kind of like ridiculous that no one notices this.
Yeah. Or hears any motion whatsoever until that like spiked tail comes through the.
Yeah.
Any other.
I don't know. I think
that's a pretty good swath of modern monsters.
I think we hit a lot of good points about modern monsters.
Yeah. And the great thing about modern monsters is they just keep coming.
Yeah. Well, we didn't talk about the most modern. Most monstrous monster. Man. Let's put it in the hour cut.